Welcome to the My Money, My Lifestyle podcast. We discuss all things money because whether or not we like it, money matters. I'm your host, Maya Fisher-French, and today we are talking side hustles. Now, it's estimated that about 47% of employed South Africans, these are people who are employed, actually own a business. And in most cases, the businesses are side hustles to their formal employment. And quite frankly, with the rise in the cost of living, it's not surprising that we're seeing more people looking for additional ways to earn an extra income. So today I'm chatting to Willem Goos, who is author of Side Hustle Success, about how to start that side hustle on a shoestring and without taking a big risk. Yes, Willem, a nice little punt for your book. And thank you. Thank you for sending me your book. For those who are watching it on the video, you'll see all the little post-it notes that I've made. I really enjoyed it. Some great common sense, some practical advice in it. I've even got little highlights. I was speaking to my son about your book. So yeah, really enjoyed it. And I think one of the things you wrote about is starting a business in 5 minutes. And I thought that was a great topic. You know, you come across people who spend 2 years planning a business, thinking about reading, analyzing, and never getting started. You know, you need to test an idea as soon as possible.
That's true. The biggest obstacle I see with my work in townships, people sit there, I haven't started, I've been waiting for funding for 5, 6, 7, 8 years. And then I go, but hang on, you can do this. And the guy says, I could have started 6 years ago. Said you could have, but it's that limiting belief that you have to have funding, you have to have a business plan. I go like, you don't need either of those.
Yeah. I love that you say you don't need a business plan. Yes, if you're going to a bank and you're going to convince a bank that you need funding and all that, believe you me, you need a business plan. But there's a lot in just testing out an idea quickly, sharply, and I want to get to that because I think that's the essence. Test it out. Does it work? Start the hustle. You know, that's going to give you more information for your future business plan than sitting watching YouTube videos or listening to podcasts. But this podcast is going to tell you how to do it. Okay. This is the real one. Okay. This is the one you should be listening to. I want to start off with, I broke down your book for me, for the little things that really kind of stuck out for me in this. And I think the first one you started with was, how much time can you give the side hustle? Remember, you're employed, okay? So how much time do you have?
That's a very good question, Maya, and I appreciate that. It depends on you. I always tell people there's no right way or wrong way to start your business. Obviously, if it doesn't work, you didn't do it right. But if it gives you what you want and somebody says you're doing it wrong, but it's giving you what you want. Why? It's like me having dinner with my son and somebody walking in. You're raising this kid wrong. Excuse me, man. Would you mind leaving? And it's up to you. It's your business. You can do with it whatever you want. Because people are stuck with, this is what it should. I should work on my business. Lives. Okay, it's your choice. I work in my coaching business. I love coaching people. I work on my job creation business. And it's my choice. I can do whatever I want to. So getting back to your question about time, if you have an hour or 2 hours a day, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, start with that. See if it gives you what you hoped it would. If it doesn't, stop and question, okay, should I continue with this? Should I try something else? Should I give it more? What should I do? But as long as you make the decision and you don't wake up 6, 7, 8, 12 months later, go like, what happened to my life? And that's the key thing. Set the time. Now, I know many women have said this to a man. It's been 2 years and we're not married yet. Okay? Have that in the back of your mind that your business, I'm going to give you a month to make me X amount of money. And if you get there and it hasn't done anything or a little, ask yourself, what am I going to do? Will I continue with it? Will I innovate it? Will I kill it or keep it? Because Remember, in business, polygamy is allowed. I can have multiple businesses, not that I suggest. It doesn't work necessarily in personal relationships, and it's very difficult in business as well.
I think with polygamy and relationships, it can often cost you more money. You're hoping that the business will make you money. So I'm just saying, those are probably two big differences there.
Absolutely, unless you marry right.
And you also sort of said, start with what resources you already have. Like, what do you, without going and getting funding, without going and, people always start off with, what do I still need to get? And I often think that that's just a reason to stop moving forward. Okay. It's like, well, I can't yet because. So start off with, what do you already have?
Absolutely. You know what? If you listen to people, because I work in townships with my human entrepreneur business, and people try to build a future with bricks that do not exist. I don't have this and I don't have this. And I said, rather build with the bricks that you do have. Maya, have you ever seen a child sit with a box of Legos and going, I still need instructions? And yet, no, they just build an aircraft, a house, whatever the case may be. And you need to look at your inner Lego playing child again and see, well, I have this and I have that. One of my favorite stories is a woman that went through my program in one of the townships, and she has a bakery. She does scones and biscuits, and she doesn't have an oven. And I
Huh.
was like, but how? It's and they shocked. And I love asking this of MBAs. They have no answers usually. And it's simple. You need this,
A phone.
a phone. Yeah. And you pick up and go like, hey, bud, you have an oven. Can I bake at your house? Okay, no. Do you know somebody? So she takes the ingredients, walks to her sister's house, bakes, takes the stock with a taxi to the rank, sells. And that's how she bootstraps this thing until she can afford her own oven if she wants to. And
I
it's
have to,
your choice.
it reminds me actually of my neighbor. So my neighbor during COVID, we have locked down, nobody can go to the shops, and she loves baking and she makes sourdough bread. She makes the most amazing sourdough bread. And she started asking us if we wanted it, and then she started delivering it to all of our houses in the neighborhood. Today, 5 years later, she has a full bakery. She's moved out of her house. She's working from a bakery. She's got a proper bakery. She delivers her bread to two of the big spas here. She's got a proper thriving business. She didn't wait to say, I first need a bakery. She started from her
I
kitchen.
need funding.
Exactly. She didn't need funding. She didn't, until she got to a point where she knew her pricing by then. She knew the demand. She knew what people wanted. All of that. Again, we make, we I think we look, we want the Rolls Royce. So imagine if she woke up one day saying, I'm going to start a bakery that sells X amount every week, and the two spas in my neighborhood are going to be my clients, and I'm not going to do it until I'm ready for that. Should never have got off the ground.
No,
Imagine if she went to the bank and said,
no.
this is my idea, fund it.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, if you do have a business idea that requires funding, because a bakery or anything like that actually requires a shop fitting and everything else. Start the business, make money, save money, fund your own business. Because you're going to be way more careful with that when it's your own money.
Oh,
When it's,
yes.
and you have to understand that when you borrow money, you're taking future profits into the present. So if you take 100,000 bucks, 4 years later, when you thought, okay, there's going to be 100K in the bank, you have to give somebody 200,000 back. So that might not be a surprise you want. So rather take your own money. I've never applied for funding. I always take my own money and waste my own money on stupid ideas, which I have had a lot of.
I love that this idea of stupid ideas, right? Because I mean, I want to talk about some of your stupid ideas, but how do you find a good idea, or how do you know if you have a good idea? And one of the things is, and I think you wrote that consumers themselves are a great source of good ideas. And you wrote, customers are the source of exceptional business ideas. The customers share their challenges in accomplishing something. All you have to do is to come up with a solution. And in many ways, I suppose my neighbor's a good example of that. She tested her bread and her price point and her demand on us in her neighborhood.
She
So,
picked up the phone.
yeah,
She
she
went
picked
like,
up
hey,
the
Maya,
phone.
would you like some loaves of bread? Why
Yeah.
don't I take two? And that's it. That's how she started the business in 5 minutes. She picked up the phone. But yeah, you know, getting back to your point, people customers are the source of great business ideas. One thing that I know about entrepreneurs and those who strive to be entrepreneurs, everybody hates sales. People don't like doing sales. But oh my, Maya, are we brilliant at selling a bad idea to ourselves? And they're like, oh, this is going to work. It's going to be the best. It won't fail. So why it's not good to come from you, because it's only relevant in a problem in your life. It's not necessarily something in somebody else's life. And if you look at it, it boils down to having conversations and listening to people. Maya, when last did somebody listen to you? Just listen when you talk and they go, oh, that's interesting, Maya. Tell me more. When, does that ever happen in your life? It's few and far between.
No one listens. I don't think I listen to anyone either, in all fairness.
Exactly. When last did you listen? And I always dare people, if you go to the office and you come home and you have another warm body in the house, try to listen to them for 5 minutes. Not listening to reload so that you have a retort. Listening to listen and understand. You know, most people, I have a bad day. Oh, you had a bad day. Well, let me tell you about mine. It's this uppity, uppity thing. Just listen and connect with people. And you can test that anywhere. I'll be in Woolworths and see somebody picks up a specific cheese. I'll walk over. Hi, that's interesting. What made you choose that cheese? Next thing, 30 minutes later, I know their running schedule, where they live, how many kids, what work they do, et cetera, et cetera. What's their biggest challenges? I don't know them from a bar of soap. And that's the key thing, is to be the, most people try to sound interesting. And that's the mistake. To be the most interesting person, you have to be the most interested person. So become interested in people instead of trying to be interesting to people.
And being interested in people, you start to hear, wait, hold on, this is their challenge. I think I can find a solution for that. And I do have to say, you know, when I've been thinking about a lot of the things that make businesses successful, and many of them are convenience. The more convenience you can bring to people, the more you can remove their challenges, the better the business idea. But again, it's got to be a discussion you've had with multiple people. It can't just be your perspective on a challenge. I know you said you've made multiple mistakes in business and you've ended up losing a lot of money because you got caught up with a brilliant idea that you thought was brilliant. Can you give us an example of one of those?
Yeah, so I had this brilliant idea back in the day, and I'm talking about 12 years ago. A friend of mine has a photographic studio, and being a professional speaker, so I have her do my press picks because I have a face for radio. I need all the help I can get. And I thought to myself, okay, I'm going to have this online platform. You can pay, upload your pictures for LinkedIn or whatever, and they will doctor it. We'll send it back to you immediately and everything. And my target market's going to be HR. So, and for all headhunters, people looking for jobs, because if your picture stands out from anybody else's, oh, you're going to get the job. And I built the system, I built the website, put the payment stuff in place. I spent about $40,000 on that. And then I called a headhunter and said, hey, I built a system. Do you want to test it? She said, you know what? The first thing we do is we rip the picture off so people can't be biased.
Had you asked that question first, you would have saved yourself.
I would not have lost 40 grand. And that's the thing is, so over time, I am a slow learner, I have to admit. Over time, you get tired of losing your own money. And now, when, so I had a brainstorm idea. I called somebody, said, yeah, there is this kind of an embarrassing problem that we have in this sector. So I created the brochure this morning. And I sent it to three people, and tomorrow I'll pick up the phone and go like, hi, are you going to spend money on this? Let's try this. So I'm immediately going to sell it. Have I created it? Not by a mile, but I'm going to get the customers first.
I think that I want to come back to that, because I think that's a very key point. I want to come back to it, because One of the things you also mentioned in your book was that surveys are dangerous. Again, you're trying to test your idea. And you're saying when people create surveys, they tend to ask questions that confirm their own ideas rather than challenging them. So because you actually almost don't know the questions you want to, that you don't know, I suppose. Like you didn't think to ask the HR person, do you use photographs? You know, and I mean, surveys can also be very, self-affirming rather than challenging.
Well, I always like to combine personal and intimate relationships with business because they're exactly the same. And it's imagine this guy having a crush on this girl, and he's only going to ask her questions about things that he knows she likes and that she's interested in. And he's not necessarily going to ask the difficult questions that might disqualify her as a potential partner long term. Because his heart says, oh, I really want to be with this woman. And his heart says, don't ask that, don't ask that. So you ignore the red flag. And then when he commits, you go, goodness, how did I get myself into it? Well, because you didn't ask the hard question. And that's the thing is to be willing to ask the questions that will disprove what you're trying to do. And I tell people if you ask enough questions and you really ask the hard ones and people can't disprove it, then you're onto something. Then you're definitely onto something.
And focus groups, those are the worst. I mean, I've seen focus groups. Never ask a focus group what they want because first they go and they list all sorts of things and a whole like they kind of wish list, even though most of that actually doesn't matter to them. Or you'll say to them, this is my product idea, and they'll say, oh, great, I'd use that. But then you bring the product to market and they don't use it. That again, focus groups, those sorts of things, or just asking someone, would you use it? Yes, I'd use it. Show me the money. And that's the point you made just now. Show me the money.
Yes, if you do make the mistake of asking the question, if I do this, will you do that? Because nobody can predict the future. And they said, yes, ask them for a deposit with immediate effect. You know, if I can't sell it now, I won't be able to sell it then. And that's the heartbreak because I have built stuff before where people said, yeah, this is really something we want. And then you go, we don't want it.
If someone's prepared to pay a deposit and you say to them, okay, I'm going to bring this product out at $1,000, but I'll give it to you at a discount if you put a deposit down now, and they're prepared to do that. And by the way, that's a crowdfunding concept. Very interesting. I don't know if you've come across Thunder Fund. They were involved in this crowdfunding, and I know they did Honest Chocolate in Cape Town, where I live. So Honest Chocolate is a coffee shop and chocolate sort of does chocolates, and they raise the money based on selling cups of coffee in the future. So you could buy cups of coffee in the future. So you could say, okay, I'll fund you, and in exchange, when we open, you will get, free coffee for a month. So immediately they tested their concept. Would people be coming to our premises? Do people like our concept enough to forward buy their coffee? And then what happens? You open up the coffee shop and suddenly you have customers. It's not empty because they're all redeeming
They're
money.
prepaid.
It's all prepaid. So those are kind of the things that I think, and it's show me the money. I think that's probably to me, like, that's the way you test your product is it's all about the money.
I mean, this thing that I'm pitching now is a one-day training course. And I'm going to tell to them, say to them, 50% discount, but I want a one-on-one interview with each person afterwards, plus a video. Testimonial of every person and a video and written testimonial by management. So if I have three of those, kaboom, I have proof. And if something goes wrong with one, I fix it and I redo it and I redo it and so on and so forth.
And
And
you're
you
getting
tell
that
people,
feedback. You're getting feedback to improve
yes,
your product, improve
yeah.
your product, improve your product. Absolutely. In your book, you had such a great example of a discussion to have in asking those questions. I think you used the example of, okay, you want to start a social media marketing business. So you go to somebody who already has a social media marketer and you ask them questions to find out what they want and what's missing. And I mean that dialogue in that book to me was such a great example of finding the challenges. Maybe just give us some of those examples.
The key thing is, if you go to another business owner and said, "I just want to talk to you. I want to learn. I'm not going to sell anything to you. I just want to learn about your needs in social media marketing because I'm thinking of starting such a business. Do you mind? I'll buy you coffee. I'll bring you a slab of chocolates, whatever. And I'll just start. Maya, you currently have a social media marketing person." "Yes, I do." "And what made you choose them?" "That's great. Did you have somebody before then?" "Oh, that's interesting. What's the reason that they're not working for you anymore?" "Oh, so they moved away." "Okay, so that's something. Oh no, this happened. Oh, so now you know the firing criteria, and now you know the hiring criteria for that. What did that other person not do? If you think back, apart from that fireable offense, what else didn't they do?" "Oh, this. And about the current one?" "Yeah, they're doing this, but not this. So, oh, that's interesting. Is that important to you?" "Yes, very. So I am looking somewhere, but I'm okay for now." So you know they're busy shopping because that is an important thing, but because they don't have that trust in that relationship, they can't have that open discussion with that person. So just through a few questions, I already know what the hiring and firing criteria is for this. I know what big problem, and I can probably ask them, was there a big price difference between these two? And what was this? And et cetera, et cetera. I'm not a big fan of price wars. I love giving better value to people, but not necessarily competing on price. Yeah.
Competing on price. Great point. How do you set your price? Because this has to be, and I mean, certainly I'm a freelancer. This is the most challenging thing facing any business owner. I suppose you're selling a product, you shop around and look what other people are. If I'm selling something on Facebook Marketplace, I always go and see what are people selling a similar thing for. And you, but that's not really how to run a business, right? How do you decide how much do I need to earn? What are people prepared to pay? What am I worth? What's my product worth? That I think is a hard one, very hard.
You see, the value you can't really determine. I knew somebody who had a confectionery shop, and they used to sell cupcakes at 50 bucks a cupcake. People will buy that. I will buy that as well. It's a good cupcake. Some people go like, "I pay 50 bucks for a cake." I'm like, "I do not want to taste that cake, please, not by a mile." So the best way to do that is to play around and find out. And I was talking to a young entrepreneur in Kenya the night before, and he has about 80 customers already on his platform. And he said, "Not one refused to sign up. Everybody we spoke to signed up." I said, "Ooh, that's dangerous." They're like, "Why?" It's because if nobody says no, obviously you're charging too cheap and you're leaving money on the table. And his face was, oh, he thought it was, "I'm so great, nobody can say no to you." No, you're so low, it's just easy to say yes. Okay. I have a rule of thumb. About 30% of people should quite be shocked by your price. They're like, "Ooh, that's expensive." And that's a good sign. Because then you know, have a thing. If 50, 60% starting, "Oh, this is ridiculous," then you know you're on that. Then somebody says, "Oh, that price is too high." "Thank you for giving me that feedback, Mike." And that's why we're running a special this month. So for this month, and you sign up now, I grandfather you in on this new low price. How does that sound? So I adapted right there. And you can. And go and test your price with 10 people. Don't go and market to the world. Go and speak to 10 people. "Hi, this is the price. See if they buy." If 10 out of 10 buy, raise your price. Well, if you start seeing by seven, nobody says no. Raise your price. And if
It's a
almost
great,
everybody says no, make a plan.
yeah, and I think it's a great advice because I still have that moment where I probably don't get 30% saying it's too high, so I probably need to up my rates. But every now and then I get someone saying, "Oh no, we can't afford this." I said, "Oh, that I'm really sorry, you can't, that." But then I feel guilty. I always feel guilty. I'm like, oh, shame,
No.
poor person. But actually, at the end of the day, we are here to make money. We're offering a service and it has a value. You're not, we don't go to work for charity, right? It was a free service. And
I want to offer you an alternate perspective. Apologies for interrupting. As don't feel guilty. It's simple, Maya. They're not your customer.
Finding the right customer,
Yeah.
finding a customer with money. That's actually one of your chapters is
Yeah.
finding customers with money. And you know, and I think in that section you write about you starting up your coaching experience and exactly that point. You need, you know, people to say no, it's too expensive. You need somebody to say it's too expensive, otherwise it's too cheap.
Absolutely. You know what? If somebody's a VW Polo driver, you show them anything Mercedes or BMW, they will complain it's expensive because they think from the perspective of a VW Polo. And no matter what you do to this BMW or Mercedes, it will never satisfy them. So if you're selling BMWs and Mercs, talk to BMW and Merc buyers. Don't go and talk to Polo people. Because that's an entry-level car.
But okay, I'm going to put a little bit of a but there. So you've got a lot of
Shoot.
people who are startups and they don't necessarily have experience. So they do need to, at the beginning, get experience. Like you said, you know, starting out or whatever product it is, you've got to build your experience, you've got to get your product. You may be still in test phase. So there is a time where you do need to. You know, you need to offer something at you can't just start saying, well, I'm amazing and I deserve all this money and I'm going to set myself out there. Because I think people get that, right? They do this visualization of how amazing they are and then they're surprised when nobody signs them up. So how do
Yeah.
you find that? And I remember listening to a woman speaking who said, you know, she started out in photography and she was a novice photographer still, but she would go to small businesses who couldn't afford beautiful artwork in their offices, but she would offer to take amazing photographs for them that they could afford because, you know, that's, you know, what she could afford to do for them. And she found her opportunity there. And then over time, she built up to an incredible business where she does wallpapers and all sorts of things. But it also started out saying, you know, find a customer who can afford what you're offering because you're still building your expertise, you're still building your brand. I mean, how do you feel about that?
Oh, absolutely. As a professional speaker, I find it hilarious. I did a talk yesterday. Are you a professional speaker on stage or on paper? Because so many of them, but Willem, I know my worth. They should pay $35,000 for my keynote. Yeah, it's 15 people, Bob. No, they're not going to pay it. Meet your customer somewhere. If you have one keynote every quarter at 35,000 rand, something is not working. If you can book multiples at a more affordable price and you become so busy and the guy calls, listen, I want to book you again. Maya, it was nice last time I did it for you for 12. I have to fit it in. My going rate's currently 25, 35, whatever the case may be. This is how it works. And it's the key thing there is to build up the momentum. That's the important thing. You're trying to build a repeatable system, but don't go and play necessarily with lowballing it the whole time. Test, tell people when I give somebody discount for a keynote, I will invoice them 35,000 rand and then I will list the discount. Because they know how much it is worth and they can see it and then they pay. So you don't set the price at X amount. You go, like, this is me, but because you're a small group and I understand you're a small company, this is your rate. But they're fully aware of what they're doing. Does that answer your question?
I think it does. And I think it's important for people also, because I do come across that. I do come across people saying, well, I believe in myself and I won't sell myself short. Well, you know, you may believe in yourself, but you've got to get other people to believe in you first, right? I think there's that it can sometimes be a bit delusional. And I think that's also part of it. But I suppose also when it comes to setting your price, you know, we're talking about intellectual capital, right? Or our own IP and, you know, just a service. But if you've obviously got a product, then there's a lot of other things that go into setting a price for a product, which is, of course, how much is it? What are my input costs? What is my time? You know, and how important is that? Is that something that you can, I think you suppose you have to start off with some idea, but that's again something you're going to have to tweak over time to say, I think there's a lot of people who don't understand all the costs of producing something, and then they're usually making a loss in the beginning and they have to tweak the price. I mean, how do you kind of work through that?
That's a very good question and point you want to make there. So I come from a manufacturing background originally, and almost every second guy in the township wants to start a clothing brand. I have no idea why wants a clothing brand, and everybody goes, "I need R1 million to start my clothing store." I said, "No, you don't. You can start today without any money."
Okay, so I
Okay.
just have to stop you there. It's always R1 million. I have come across this endlessly. I don't know what R1 million is. I don't know what it is about R1 million, but and without a business plan, without anything, they all need R1 million. Anyway, just to stop there, carry on.
And in Botswana, it's R1 million pula.
Yeah, that's R1 million.
And
That's not about R1 million.
always
Anyway.
R1 million. Okay. So, and I said to him, start by selling your competitor's clothing. What do you mean? Well, go to your competitor or the guy that has a brand, asking for consignment stuff, sell his stuff. He says, why? Number one, you're making money. Number two, you're building a customer book. Number three, you're saving money. Number four, you're learning what people like and don't like. If you take stuff from consignment and it doesn't sell, you just give it back. Now you're learning what's working. So over 6 months, you have money in your pocket, you have a customer base, you know what works, what doesn't work. You have a few mock-ups made of the t-shirt, of clothing, whatever you're going to make. Go to your customer, say, listen, this is my stuff. Do you want to do a pre-order? Let's say you sell 100. You do 150, pashash, there you go. And start selling somebody else's product because it's a low risk thing. Somebody spoke to me about a very specialized chicken business the other day and what they need and the coops. And I said, well, go buy chicken, resell chicken. See if the market's there, test it, you make money, you build a customer book, and then you can see, okay, I'm going to make this investment or not. I love low risk. People, this thing that entrepreneurs love risk, it's not that I wake up in the morning and have a bowl of risk for breakfast. I'm a single father. I don't want risk, but it's part of the course, but I try to avoid it as much.
I really love what you just said about, starting off selling somebody else's product. Because in selling somebody else's product, you start to find out what people want, what's missing in that person's product. When they come to you and they say, you know what, do you have a plain white t-shirt? Because that's actually which by the way, I've been on a search for plain white t-shirts. It's not actually that easy to go to find a good quality t-shirt, and I have now found Kate Jordan, if anyone wants to know, she makes really good quality white t-shirts. But that's how you
Nice.
find out. You listen to your customers and you say, wait, hold on, there's a market for this. I have to tell you, the dress that I'm wearing now, there's a woman who sells other brands. So you go to her, she looks at you and your shape, and she gives you advice as to what to wear, and she sells other brands. But she's designed her own range as well, which comes in at a better cost than the brands she sells. And she has several style dresses in different fabrics, and you can say, I like that fabric with that style dress. She's got two businesses effectively, one of brand names and the other of her kind of simple wearables that she's built up. So that
Hang
to
on. She
me is
has a research company and a
Yeah,
manufacturing company. That's
exactly.
the two that she
That's it.
has.
And she has a thriving business as a result. So I just so love what you've just said. And I hope people are listening to that, because again, I come across the same thing. I need R1 million. I'm sitting at home watching YouTube videos, motivational YouTube videos, with the great hope that I'll come up with that brilliant idea, go to the bank, say, I need R1 million for a brilliant idea that I came up sitting on my couch. Can you give it to me? No. That is not how
Not
it works.
by a mile.
So I hope that helps. And I want to end off though with when to walk away and not to fall in love with your idea. And I think you alluded to it a little bit earlier when you said, you can become a little bit, you fall in love with the ideas. You ask questions, that reinforce what you believe. Have you got personal examples of that when you've had to walk away?
I lost 2.5 million on a business I should have walked away 8 years before. And I didn't because it gave me some other fix, and I held on to that. So I always tell people it's like I bought a secondhand Aston Martin and set it alight. That's basically what I did. But now I look at something and I ask myself, how long am I going to give this? What's the price point? If you sell something very affordable, your sales cycle is exceptionally fast. The more expensive it gets, the longer your sales cycles are. So you have to give it a little bit more time. Let me tell you a quick story. I had a very sad online meeting with a person one day, and they quit their very prestigious corporate job to become a life coach. And we had an online meeting, and they called from a very fancy coffee shop. Yeah, I'm here and I'm meeting people, and I'm doing this for marketing, speaking at BNI, doing this, and I've been doing this for 2 years. And I said, that sounds great. Answer one question, please. How many paying customers do you have? They paused. They said, none. Okay, so they've been executing the same plan for 2 years and it's not working. And they haven't stopped and said, maybe I should change. So you should have, and in the book I write about it, you should do three things every day. Do business development, that's marketing, sales, that's asking for money, and then management to go like, okay, where am I going? And okay, I'm going straight still. And that's why it's so important to have a coach or mentor on your side to go, hang on, are you going in the right direction? Is that the right action? Is this giving you the results that you want? Is this the right strategy? And to question stuff. I mean, I have advisors, I have mentors, because it doesn't matter what you do, you're gonna come up with stupid ideas. Look at the most successful entrepreneurs in the world. They have boards, they have advisors, they have people around them that question them. And that's the key thing, is to ask yourself, I want this business to give me X by then. It can be customers, it can be money, it can be profit, it can be turnover, but it needs to be an upward curve, not just, wow, I want 5 million likes. No, that's vanity. I want surety, cash in the bank. I love cash. I love money. And that's proof in the pudding. If the business works, does it make money? Yes, this business works. Does it not make money? Okay, this business does not work. Very simple, black and white.
And I suppose also, like you said, it does depend on the business. I mean, some businesses, you may be growing your customer base, but you have to reach a certain level of customer base for the business to really be profitable. It's just the nature of the business. But as long as you're constantly growing, you're growing your customer base and things are improving, that's okay. But it's, if you're stagnating, I think if you're not, it's not going to change. Nothing's going to change. You're not going to hit that point at some point. It's going to, and I just wanted to also, you were talking about entrepreneurs who, have bad ideas. And I knew a couple, well, I knew the wife better than the husband, but every time I saw her, she was pulling her hair out. Her husband was on his fourth idea, the fifth idea, the sixth idea. And then the last time I saw her, he had hit his seventh idea, and the seventh idea was the jackpot. He is making a fortune out of his business. But it took him many, many, many businesses, many failures, with her, coming to her wit's end to actually get there. But the idea is to let go, move on, find another one. And maybe in the beginning that can appear to be like, oh, you're not committed, you're not, focused or whatever else. But actually, if you're an entrepreneur and that's your passion and your belief and you want to work for yourself, sometimes you do have to go through multiple of your not so genius ideas before you hit the jackpot.
I always like to tell people, marry slowly, divorce exceptionally fast.
I love that, very slowly.
If it's not working, get rid of it, move on. And that's the key thing here, is you have to play around and find out, play around, find out, play around, and consistently. I've been consistently experimenting, and with my one product line, I've been experimenting with corporates, and the sales cycles, they are 1 year to 2 years long. There's always a nyan, money, money, money. I'm tired of that. So I had a brain fart and I said, oh, let me try this. And I did this and had a small group of people there and I sold a lot of stuff out of that. And we're like, this is interesting. Let's experiment some more. And a week later, I did another experiment and it worked again. Woohoo! So now I'm playing with that. But what risk did I take? The preparation for that event and my time, maybe 5 hours, 6 hours of my time. And that's the key thing, is to play around and see if it works and just ask questions. Talk to people, try to sell it. If it doesn't sell, ask them, you know what? Thank you for that, Maya. Thank you for saying no to my book. What made you say that? And learn. And that's the important thing.
And learn, listen. It doesn't mean your whole idea is bad. It's just listen to the feedback. There may be just a few tweaks. But you mentioned a corporate, and in your book, you say people always think, I'll get in with a corporate. I've got people asking me at the moment because I did a podcast with the JSE. It's like, oh, can you get us in with the JSE? Forget corporates. I mean, you're totally right. Corporates can take forever. You will die, your business will die multiple deaths before you get that contract with the corporate. Start with small clients. Start with small clients, build that up. Absolutely, because they make quicker decisions. Small businesses and smaller companies make quicker decisions. And I think that you talk about that in your book. I think very, very key
Yeah.
point as well.
Because people don't understand business-to-business sales is exceptionally difficult. Because in a big corporate, you will have five customers: the CEO, the CFO, the training manager, HR, and then the direct sponsoring exec. And if one guy does not like your face, nothing's going to happen.
Oh yeah, I
And
can tell
that's
you now, you could even be approached by a corporate saying, we want to work with you. The team are desperate to work with you. And that story starts and goes on and on and on. And 2 years later, they say, oh, you know what? We've decided not to go ahead. That is the reality. Yeah, you know there. Willem, you've been there. We've all got those t-shirts. So I think that is, I do really, encourage people to get your book, Side
Thank
Hustle
you.
Success, a low cost, low risk way to make more money. I think it was very valuable. I think there's some really key points. As somebody who has my own business, there were things that I thought, wow, yep, absolutely, spot on. And I
Thank you.
think you don't have to learn from your own mistakes. You can also learn from Willem's. So absolutely, Willem, I really appreciate your time. And I'm sure my listeners are going to get a lot of value from this. And I think the bottom
Thank you.
is, if you can't start your business in 5 minutes, yeah, maybe you need to move on to a different business.